I really like United. And here's a couple of experiences I've had. Well, first of all, United, like all carriers, will change their schedule quite regularly. So you book the award that works best for you, even if it's not ideal. If you're booking this thing 8, 10, 11 months out, nearly 100% chance you're going to get a schedule change. When that happens, it's the keys to the castle. You call them up and you say, this schedule change doesn't work for me. I want United flight 123 connecting to flight 456, which is the perfect flight that you would have booked had you had unlimited money. And you often get that. And here's something I discovered in the last year that I'm just stunned. This trick can work even when there's not a schedule change. And so a year ago, we had a great trip scheduled to South Africa. And we had the best we could get with points and miles, a pretty circuitous routing from home, Joburg, Addis Ababa, Dublin, Washington Dulles, Denver. And so we call United and we say, you know what? We have a really short connection in Addis. And we're really nervous about that. We really don't want to spend the night in this city that's new to us. And we really think there's a good chance we're going to miss this connection. And that's going to cost United. It's going to cost everyone a lot of money. Why don't you just put us on your nonstop flight out of Joburg into Newark? It took about an hour. We were on hold for a while, but they said yes.
Hey there, points people. You just heard a clip from Jason Steele from jasonsteele.com. Jason is one of the leading experts in credit cards and award travel. Since 2008, he's contributed to more than 100 different outlets, and he was one of the first contributors to The Points Guy. In this episode, expect to hear about points and miles strategies when you have specific travel dates, how travel weather waivers can help you when you're traveling, different strategies to upgrade to business and first class, and so much more. In this episode, Jason and I also talk about some of the benefits of using United Miles. And one way to start earning more United Miles is with the United Mileage Plus Explorer credit card. Remember, if you decide to apply for the United credit card or any other cards, never apply directly through Google. Always use a friend or creator's referral link. And if you're interested in supporting this show when you apply for your next card, check out geobreezetravel.com/cards. And if you're not sure what card is right for you, I offer free credit card consultations at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. And we have links to the United Mileage Plus Explorer card and the free consultation form for you in the show notes as well. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast, a show for anyone wanting to level up their travel hacking lifestyle. I'm your host, Julia Menez. I'm a travel hacker, coach, speaker, Filipina-American ENTJ who loves solid travel gear and using shortcuts on spreadsheets. On this show, I'm on a mission to bring you travel hackers from all walks of life to help you level up your travel hacking game. We dive into credit cards, miles, points, strategy, mindset, and the secrets behind how to travel the world for next to no cost. So let's get hacking. Hey, Jason, welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast.
Great to be here, Julia.
I am so excited to have you here and to cover today's topic, which a lot of people ask about all the time. Because whenever people are like, well, how do I find good flight deals or hotel deals on points? The most common response that creators will give is, oh, you just have to be really flexible. And then you follow the deal and you travel whenever there's a deal that shows up. And for a lot of people, the reality is they just can't do that. They don't live their life on the internet. They have normal W-2 jobs, 9-to-5 jobs. And they're like, I can't just pick up and go to Africa on Friday like a lot of people on the internet seem to. So for people who have to travel with a specific schedule in mind, or they are traveling for a particular conference or a wedding, or they have a set vacation schedule for their kid's school, I am very excited to chat with you today about all the different ways that you can still implement points and miles and travel hacking and all of that, even if you do not have a flexible schedule. But before we jump into all of that, tell us a little bit about you and how did you even get into the game of points and miles?
I've been in a travel my whole life and always lived in cities like Atlanta, Denver, the big cities and rural areas where you pretty much have to jump on a plane to go anywhere. Otherwise, it's a 10-12 hour drive to the next big city over. When I got married in 05, my wife is from Israel and we went to visit her family. And it was like, we spent $3,000 on two economy class tickets. We're like, this is ridiculous. So right after that, we bought a house, we renovated it. I started getting serious about it. I signed up for a few promotions. Obviously I got an airline credit card. I charged a lot on the card. Our next trip, we were in Lufthansa business class and we were very happy. And of course it was free. So from then I was on a boring job at computers and I was just writing about credit cards and personal finance, this new medium called blogging. And nobody had read my blog. But one day I decided to see if anyone would pay me to write for their blog, which to my surprise, they were. And so I became a freelance blogger. And you know, the big outlet that probably people are familiar with, that I was the first contributor over at The Points Guy. But also since 2008, I've worked for over 100 outlets online, a few in print, but mostly online. And my passion is points and miles and credit cards is what I mostly write about. And I have a lot of fun doing it.
Awesome. So with all of the different industry events that you go to, I'm sure you attend a lot of conferences. What is the strategy for somebody who wants to use points and miles to save on work trips or industry trips like that, where you can't really just be like, oh, just move the conference because the travel dates are a little bit better 3 days before? How does somebody even approach something like that if you have a set date that you have to be in a particular city?
Yeah, I mean, I produce my own conference called CardCon, but I attend and speak at a lot of other conferences. And the strategy I use is, number one, book as early as possible. Clearly, if you know about this conference coming up next year, book it now. I already have my airline tickets to every conference I'm going to next year that I'm aware of, and that's within Southwest Airlines booking window. Two, the hotel conference rate can be good. And certainly if your company is paying for it, that's even better. If you're paying for it, if you're a freelancer, yeah, you could consider it. And this is terrible advice considering I'm desperately trying to get people to sign up for the hotel that I've made a room block commitment at. But frankly, sometimes I'll stay a block or two away at a different property that's offering me a better deal because money's coming out of my pocket. If I was filling out an expense report, I would gladly stay at the conference hotel. But I look in the neighborhood. Look, I've been to conferences at hotels that were so large that it was the equivalent of walking several blocks within the hotel to get to my meeting. So it's no big deal if I go outside and walk two or three blocks in a beautiful city. I don't mind that at all. So I've been guilty of that on occasion, is staying elsewhere. I don't know if that helps or not. When it comes to using points and miles, obviously you want to exhaust some of your traditional legacy American, United, Delta. But I really like, for events where I have to be there on a certain day, more fixed value points like Southwest, to a lesser extent JetBlue. But I also will look at different ways of booking through a credit card travel agency. For example, you get 1.5 cents in value per point redeemed through the Chase Rewards Travel Center if you have the Sapphire Reserve card. Now that the value of Southwest points is declining closer to 1.3, 1.4 cents, I might as well just book it through Chase. They just allowed you to do that through online through their travel center. And not only will I get 1.5 cents in value per point, but I'll get more than that because I'll earn points from it. I'll earn credit towards elite status. So you can do something similar with the Amex Business Platinum, gives you a 35% points rebate for the carrier you designated for your $200 annual fee credit. And 35% rebate, if you do the math, works out to 1.54 cents in value. And it also works with any carrier if you book first class. So sometimes I may be able to find good first class deals and I'm earning points from it. I'm flying first class and I'm paying a reasonable number of points. When the cash price goes down and the points price goes up, you want to reconsider maybe just booking it directly through either Amex Travel or Chase Travel in this case.
That's a good point, because most of the time we say it's a mistake to book through the portal if somebody is going to be booking something for 200,000 points through the portal, whereas they could get it for 60,000 points if they know how to use transfer partners. But you make a pretty good point there that if it's a cheap cash rate anyway, you could earn your status and still get your loyalty points and everything if you are booking through the portal, because it still codes like you just paid money for your flight if you do that with Southwest or a lot of really any other airlines. Is that correct?
It's a revenue ticket when you book through Chase Travel or Amex Travel. And a revenue ticket earns you miles, earns you credit towards status. At least in the airline world, it's every bit as good as if you booked it through the airline itself. Hotel is different. You book hotel through Chase Travel or Amex Travel, you will not earn loyalty points. You will not earn credit towards elite status in most cases.
If you are traveling for a work thing and you book it with points, I know you're not an accountant, but how do you normally work that in with expense reporting? Because you mentioned expense reporting before.
Yeah, there's a couple ways you can do this. It all depends on what you're comfortable with. In theory, especially if your boss says it's okay, price out a cash ticket and then redeem your points. And if your boss is okay with it, send in the value of it. Or heck, I suppose you could even book it and then cancel within 24 hours. And then you'd actually have a receipt for the flight that you would have purchased. The only thing that would be different is your confirmation numbers. You have to decide if you think that's dishonest or not. But another way to do it, and I'll give you a good example. Right now, I'm in charge of booking travel for my daughter's speech and debate team, which is a nationally competitive team, travels around the country. Because I'm a travel expert, I volunteer to do that. I'm doing it in the way, frankly, that earns me the most points. You know, so I'm booking it right now through my Chase Freedom Unlimited, which not only gives me 5 points per dollar on the Chase travel portal, but gives me another 5 points because they're doing that matching offer. And now I'm earning 10 points per dollar spent. And the travelers are getting a revenue ticket, the nonprofit that helps fund the team's travel. So reimbursing me, and I'm not taking a commission, and they know I'm happy to earn the points for my work. So if you have that opportunity, a lot of companies use a system called Concur, which books it for you, and you don't really earn much from it. But if you work for a very small company or a company that doesn't use Concur or lets you book it yourself, yeah, use the card that gives you the most points per dollar. That could be an Amex Platinum giving you 5 points per dollar, or that new Chase Freedom deal. If you can get the double points promotion, get 5 points now, 5 points later, and all 10 points per dollar, I'll take that.
Yeah, for sure. If you have a job where you can just book yourself on a cash ticket and then get reimbursed and earn all the points, highly recommend doing that instead of using your points and trying to finagle some really complicated route itinerary just so that you can get their own points. If somebody else is reimbursing you for the travel anyway, just pay a cash ticket. Make sure you link up your loyalty numbers to it and go from there. If you are in charge of covering your own ticket, what are some of your favorite airlines for if you have to do travel that is not flexible at all? I know you mentioned Southwest before. Is that the preferred one?
For me, it is, because look, they're going to give you the direct correlation between the cash value of the ticket and the number of points you pay. And if you book it far enough in advance, you do really well. The other thing is I have a companion pass. My wife has a companion pass. Two companion passes mean two free tickets. So even when I find very, very low priced tickets on miles on a traditional carrier, it's still rarely going to be better than booking Southwest. Occasionally it does happen, but most of the time I'm going to do better on Southwest. It's just, I also get the two free check bags. I don't have to pay for any seat assignments, some advantage, you know, change fees, and you book it now. If the price drops a little bit later, of course, you can refare it basically and get the points back. If you have to cancel, it's fully refundable when you book with points, you get the points back. Most airlines do that now. I say that's like the only good thing to come out of COVID.
Yeah, for sure. And with Southwest flexibility and price matching, they are definitely a favorite amongst people who have to change their plans all the time and can't really be flexible with their travel where they're like, we have to go on these dates, and repricing with Southwest can be a really good trick there. What if somebody is going internationally or somewhere that Southwest just doesn't fly? What are some of the other good airlines as far as favorability with repricing or having to cancel flights or having to move it to a specific date? Do you have any favorites abroad?
I really like United. And here's a couple of experiences I've had. Well, first of all, United, like all carriers, will change their schedule quite regularly. So you book the award that works best for you, even if it's not ideal. If you're booking this thing 8, 10, 11 months out, nearly 100% chance you're going to get a schedule change. When that happens, the keys to the castle. You call them up and you say, this schedule change doesn't work for me. I want United flight 123 connecting to flight 456, which is the perfect flight that you would have booked had you had unlimited money. And you often get that. And here's something I discovered in the last year that I'm just stunned me. This trick can work even when there's not a schedule change. And so a year ago, we had a great trip scheduled to South Africa. And we had the best we could get with points and miles, a pretty circuitous routing from home, Joburg, Addis Ababa, Dublin, Washington Dulles, Denver. And so we call United and we say, you know what? We have a really short connection in Addis. And we're really nervous about that. We really don't want to spend the night in this city that's new to us. And we really think there's a good chance we're going to miss this connection. And that's going to cost United. It's going to cost everyone a lot of money. Why don't you just put us on your nonstop flight out of Joburg into Newark? It took about an hour. We were on hold for a while, but they said yes. It was unbelievable. So there are circumstances where if you ask nicely, you have a good reason, United will put you on their own metal. So first you start by making sure you have a ticket booked from point A to point B. But then you call them up and just see if you come across a nice person who's willing to open up the same reward availability. Even if there's not a schedule change, yeah, we did have a short layover in Addis, that's for sure. But I accepted that when I booked it. But then I hoped for something better. We got it. So United can be very generous. Delta, there's not much value there anymore with their SkyMiles awards. American, I'm not sure how generous they'll be, but this is always worth a shot with the schedule change. So book the best you can just at the lowest kind of mileage level. Hope for the schedule change. The alternate flight you suggest must be operated by the carrier that ticketed it. So if you have a British Airways flight that you booked with American miles, you could say, I'd rather be on the American Airlines flight. But you can't do it the other way around. If I book it on American, it's going to be hard to say, could you put me on British? Because they won't be able to open up award space on British or Iberia or Japan Airlines, any one of their partners.
Is it worth speculatively doing this if you're like, okay, I need to be in Italy on a particular day for a wedding. Let's book it with something through Air Canada. Is it worth speculatively booking the wrong day and then being like, hey, Air Canada, I got an email that you moved my flight by 20 minutes. That doesn't work for me. Can you just book it on like 2 days before, which is the day I actually need? Does that work?
It can work. I mean, look, when I book something, it has to be something that I am willing to fly. Like I can make it work. Oh God, I don't want to wake up at 5 a.m. I don't want to change planes twice, but at the saver level, I can make it work if I have to. And I book this stuff and I show my wife these not so great itineraries. And I'm like, don't worry, honey, 95% chance we're not going to fly this. We have 3 kids. I say I leverage my inflexibility, meaning I know when the break is years out even. I book it 11 months out. Even if it looks like crap, I say, don't worry, we're probably not going to fly this. We're probably going to fly something different. And sometimes it comes up to the last minute. I'll give you an example. On the way to South Africa, we had a Delta ticket early in the morning, and we weren't too excited about it. Sure enough, this big storm is heading towards the Northeast, and I was able to predict that Delta was going to have a weather waiver. And sure enough, they did. And we said, you know what? Let's just go to New York a day or two early. We'll go midday. We'll hang and see some family, do some fun things before we continue on to Egypt and South Africa. And that worked out. A weather waiver hit my return trip from New York a couple of weeks ago, and I was able to change it in my favor. I think they gave me like a week plus or minus. So sometimes there's weather waivers. The other reason I like United, and this is true of any other Star Alliance carrier, but Lufthansa is well known for opening up award space and business class within 2 weeks of departure. I've seen some information that indicates it could be as much as a month. So book something that's crap on United that you don't want to fly, but at least it'll get you there if you've got to be there. And then start checking Lufthansa award availability, not just from your home airport, but from any other airport that you can get to, say the Southwest ticket or some other positioning flight to a gateway city. And Lufthansa flies to some 20 cities in North America, give or take. So yeah, book something you don't like, and then hope Lufthansa business becomes available.
In that case, your points would be stuck with United. So that is something that people have to keep in mind, is you have to double book two things, where you book a United flight that you may or may not want to take. And then if Lufthansa opens up, which it's not going to do until the last minute, your United points are then stuck there. So if you had to move a whole bunch of Chase points over, they're there.
No, actually, that's not quite what I'm suggesting here. I'm suggesting is you change the flight you booked with United points. So let's say I booked Denver, Toronto, Vienna, and then Vienna to Athens on Aegean. Okay. And Toronto to Athens, I booked on Air Canada. So I'm using Starline carriers. And then a week before, I see, I have Denver, Frankfurt, Athens. I'm using those same United points because there's no change fees, no cancellation fees. So I cancel my United ticket and my frequent flyer ticket I booked with United Miles, and I booked Lufthansa using those same United Miles. So I haven't double booked. I haven't stranded any points.
Okay, it's all still booked through United. You don't have United over here and then
using United points to book Lufthansa. Yeah.
Yeah, and those Lufthansa tickets usually won't open up until T-minus 3 weeks out or something.
Historically, it was 2 weeks, but I've read some articles that say it could be as much as a month. So if you're able to check in on it starting a month out and then check a little bit more obsessively starting 2 weeks out. And like I said, don't just look at your home city. I live in Denver. I can get to Chicago like that. I can get to LA like that. $100 a ticket or a few thousand points on Southwest. So I'll look for any city where I feel like I can conveniently get out to jump on that Lufthansa flight. Now, if I can get Frankfurt or Munich out of Denver, I'm a happy guy.
You mentioned weather waivers. How do those work? Do they just email you, hey, free rain, there's like a storm coming in, you can change your flight to whatever? That's probably not what they say. How does it actually work?
It works pretty much like that. So when there's a major weather event that's predicted, like a big storm in the Northeast is somewhat common, thunderstorms in the Southeast, a blizzard in Denver, something like that, they will proactively send an email, although you might not get it, you might have to look at the website, and say, anyone flying in and out of the following cities, so let's say there's a big storm in Boston like there was the other day, I presume there was a weather waiver, they might list it 20 cities, Rochester and Manchester, New Hampshire and Providence, Rhode Island, Hartford, Connecticut. And if you have a flight within this time frame to or from one of those cities, you get a weather waiver, which means you can change and you can add subtract days. From the airline standpoint, they're saying, hey, we know we're going to be canceling some of these flights. We know we're going to strand a lot of passengers. Why not give them the chance to get out of the way of this storm ahead of time, either fly early like I did last year, or maybe cancel their trip. Maybe they were going to do some event that's going to be canceled anyway, or maybe, you know, for whatever reason, they've already canceled flights. They're going to let people rebook themselves onto what's available. And that helps them and it helps you. So last weekend, December 7th, I'm flying into LaGuardia. I'm flying out the 9th back to Denver. After I get off my plane, it says weather waiver. And not only does it say LaGuardia, it also says I can fly out of a co-terminal, which in this case is Long Island MacArthur. And coming back to Denver, I can fly either to Denver or to Colorado Springs, about 60 miles from here. So when Southwest does it, they even open up co-terminals, departing and arriving, which is really neat. There are people in these big metropolitan areas who, maybe I live near Washington National, but it's cheaper to drive to BWI. Now you get this weather waiver, it's like, boom, I'm going out of National, I'm going a day early, and instead of flying into LAX, I'm going to fly into Burbank, where I have family. And they don't want to pick me up at LAX anyway, but LAX was cheaper. Now I'm going to fly right into Burbank. So you can fly in and out of these expensive airports. It's basically the keys to the castle. It's up to you to pick any available seat on any available flight within that window that they give you, maybe a week plus or minus. And you can't beat that. It's like you're the CEO of the airline and you're just like, get me a seat there. You don't even care about the price because it's all the same price. That's a fun time.
That is also a really convenient trick for people who live in a particular area where you do not want to be in that area in a given month or week or something. So for example, people who live in Florida during hurricane season, maybe just book something because you're probably going to have a weather waiver anyway during hurricane season coming in and out of Florida. So then you can just change your flight to go somewhere else. Or if you are in Chicago during blizzard season anyway, or the Northeast during blizzard season, chances are you're going to be hit with a weather waiver anyway. And you probably don't want to be at home during that terrible weather. So if you're like, I'd maybe like to escape to somewhere tropical from Chicago during January or February, just go ahead and book something that you'd be willing to take 11 months out and then wait for some kind of their schedule change or weather change, because then you'll be able to book it.
That could work. Another strategy, honestly, like this big storm last year, I could see it happening. Like I saw the weather barreling into the New York area and I kept checking Delta site for the weather waiver. I knew it was going to happen. And sure enough, 3 or 4 days out, it did happen. The point is, you look at your long range forecast and there's a hurricane coming towards where I live in Florida. Maybe I should book a flight out now, whatever the cheapest flight is, doesn't matter when it is. And the chances are they're going to give me that weather waiver. And then I could rebook that to leave when I want to, as long as there's a seat available. The weather forecasters are a little bit ahead of the airlines, meaning if I look at the long-range weather forecast and I see some huge blizzard barreling in on Denver 7 days from now, maybe I book my ticket to Cancun 7 days from now, and then maybe 3 days from now they issue a weather waiver, and I say, you know what, I guess I'm going to jump on that flight to Cancun tonight or tomorrow. As long as there's a seat available, I can get out of town no matter how I want to, because that weather waiver is going to affect us. So with a little bit of savviness, maybe some meteorological skills or information, you can outsmart the airline.
Just booking far ahead, like you mentioned, because if you get, hey, there's a schedule change, or hey, there's some weather or something, be a little bit opportunistic and use that to get a more favorable flight as well.
I booked an international flight a few days ago, and within like 24 hours, I got a schedule change email. It was insane.
So how about hotels? I know that hotels are generally just super flexible anyway, where usually you can cancel your reservation up to 24, 48, 72 hours, depending on the hotel. But are there ever any instances where maybe somebody has a prepaid rate and then they can't really be flexible about it for some reason? It's for an event, it's for a wedding. And are there any other tricks that somebody should know when it comes to hotel bookings? If you're like, the room I need is just not there, or I need two rooms because we have a large family in Europe, what can be done?
Yeah, hotels are pretty easy compared to airlines, right? The major programs out there, at least the good ones, Hyatt and Wyndham, a lot of these programs will give you any available unsold room on points, which is nice. What you do have a problem with is when there's a major event in a city. And so I like to go to a couple big events every year, one of which is the AirVenture Oshkosh. And I'm kidding you not, Hilton Garden Inn sells for $800 a night. La Quinta Inn sells for $600 a night. This is La Quinta by the highway that tonight is probably something like $70. But in late July, with 500,000 people go to this event, every hotel within 60 miles sold out. So what do? I use my Wyndham points for La Quinta. And because they're selling at $600 a night, guess what? They're not sold out. They still have rooms. But I'm paying 15,000 points a night, but it's actually 13,500 because I have the Wyndham Business Earner card. 13,500 points a night for a $600 room. Never mind the fact that I don't have to camp out on the field. I actually have a hotel room. A lot of people are camping out at this event. The other big event I go to every year is the Albuquerque Balloon Fiesta. It's the only thing that ever happens in Albuquerque every year. It's otherwise a pretty sleepy town. But that week, everything is sold out. This year, we stayed at a Hilton. Next year, we all also have the St. Hilton. I book it far in advance, but the two or three Hyatts, they're already gone. They're gone. I don't even know if they're ever available. I think someone books the whole hotel and then releases it about a month out. So that's another trick, is when organizations book a whole block at a hotel about a month out, they'll release any additional rooms. So if everything looks sold out, start looking 30 days out and see if something comes up. But of course, if there's a big event, it's going to come up pretty close to the rack rate. Unfortunately, a lot of hotels will wiggle around the terms of their any room availability. They'll tell you that the room on the second floor is a high floor, or you know, the room facing the street is a city view or something like that, and they'll wiggle out of that. But Wyndham doesn't seem to do that. Wyndham, you know, seems to truly make all their rooms available, at least at some of their brands like La Quinta. That's nice. But even Hyatt, like Hyatt in Albuquerque, about a month out, you'll find space.
Yeah, a lot of people will mention Hyatt because it has an award chart, whereas Marriott and IHG and Hilton tend to be a little bit more revenue-based. But I feel like we don't mention Wyndham enough because they also still have an award chart and 15,000 points for a one bedroom, or 30,000 if you're booking like a two bedroom house style type of rental, can be a really, really good find, especially if you are bringing your whole family to an event.
Yeah, you mentioned the house style. People think of La Quinta, it's not the aspirational award. Nobody dreams of taking a vacation at La Quinta. It's not terrible. But yeah, this house style, we did a two bedroom in Maui in March using Wyndham points. And again, with that like credit card, it's a 10% discount. So 10 nights, two bedroom, 270,000 points, which I think was $6,000 normally. So we got really good value.
If somebody wants to travel in business class or first class and all they can book is economy, going back to flights, what are the airlines that make it easy to upgrade later just with a cash ticket or something? Are there certain airlines that lend themselves a little bit more easily to just paying for an upgrade later on if all you can book is an economy and you're like, I have to go on this particular date?
Look, in the old days, 20, 30 years ago, you'd book a ticket and you'd upgrade with miles. And that was a great deal. It no longer is. So now you're talking about booking a cash ticket and then upgrading again with cash. It's tough. A lot of airlines are auctioning business class seats off, meaning you put in a bid and they just select you. For domestic stuff in first class, I've had decent luck with United. I've had decent luck calling them and saying, hey, I'm in economy, what can I do to upgrade? And they could say 25,000 points, or they could say $150, whatever it is, at least they're giving you a number. It's not a bidding war. There's a little known trick. I think it still works, called United. Some people call it United Plan B. It's basically like a standby for business class. And what you do is you could find a saver level award, then you call them. And if you find someone who knows how to do this, you could pay the saver level business price. And then you're essentially on an upgrade list, but you're not really upgrading because you've already paid the correct price. So you're really they treat you like a displaced passenger. So if you Google United Plan B, you'll find a few sites out there that kind of walk you through this. It's becoming more and more challenging to do so. But in theory, you should get a business class seat before someone who's upgrading, because you've already paid for the business class seat. You just didn't get it yet. And sometimes you even get it ahead of time. So that can work. But it's pretty challenging. Maybe upgrading to premium economy is a little bit easier.
So this would be, you would get economy on like a saver award space and then call United and be like, hey, how much for the saver business space? What if there is just no saver business space? Like, how would they know what to charge you?
There's two ways of doing this. One is just to call and say, how much for an upgrade? And you might get a dollar quote. Two is you call and say, I would like to be waitlisted for saver business. So you need the points. You need to give them the points. So yeah, your points could be stranded. They will refund the points if it doesn't materialize. So you're not going to pay for something you don't get. But yeah, the plan B says, I'm going to book economy, I'm going to pay for business, and I'm going to be first in line to get that business if and when United releases it, or even on the day of the flight before anyone else upgrading.
Are there other airlines that have similar policies where it's easier to book an economy flight now because you have to lock in the date, but your chances of doing something to get upgraded, whether giving them extra money, extra points, even if there's not currently good availability on their website, are there airlines where your chances tend to be better for finagling an upgrade somehow?
I check in for business class all the time, and there's always someone in front of me or next to me saying, what do I have to do to get into business class? And they're always like, well, just give us $1,200. And they're like, I don't really know of an airline that makes it easy to do it. One of the airlines is Hawaiian. If you book a revenue ticket with Hawaiian, you have to book it through Hawaiian. You can't book it through Chaser Amex. Then they'll often have low-priced upgrades to their first class, or if you're on a longer flight, it's actually a lie flat, just like business class. So if you want to get to Hawaii and you want to have a lie flat seat and a great experience, that's one of the more affordable ways to do it. And I've read of people who book a very low-priced economy class ticket and then add a very reasonable number of miles to that. You could transfer Amex points to Hawaiian and then do that.
Emirates has something like this as well, where we were flying back from Italy to New York and we had booked business class tickets through Emirates. And there is a way to upgrade to first class where you can go one level up. So if you have economy, you can go to business. If you have business, you can go to first, where it costs an extra 30,000 points to upgrade to first.
That's pretty good.
It is pretty good. The issue, it did not go smoothly. So we were at Milan Airport. You can't do it until the day of. We showed up like 4 hours early and I was right there and she was like, yeah, it's 30,000 points per person. So I tried to move over 60,000 Amex points. They got stuck. They did not transfer in time.
Oh no.
But then I had 60,000 points in my Emirates account that I had to figure out how to use later, because Emirates is one of those airlines where you can just like book the date you want and then try to upgrade at the airport. And as long as they have availability, they'll quote you a price that day. But sometimes you get stuck.
Yeah. And I've been on that Milan JFK flight on Emirates. I took that to Italy last year. That's a good flight. I considered trying to upgrade to first. Of course, I have a family of five, so I either ditch them or I got to upgrade everybody. And neither was a very good option. So I toughed it out in business class.
My husband and I flew Emirates from Cairo to Dubai, and I totally left him in business class. I booked the first class flight straight out because that's what I did with the 60,000 points. He was very excited to have alone time. I was excited to have an entire tote bag of Emirates stuff. We had slippers. I just took the snack basket and poured it into my tote bag. I'm super classy. Oh, I showered on a plane in like 3 hours. I was like, can I make a reservation for the shower? And the flight attendant was like, that's a 3-hour flight. And I was like, yes. So I did that. The caviar, the dom, the walking up the stairs. I did all the bucket list things in like 3 hours.
No, I still haven't done Emirates first. If I was flying by myself, or maybe if it was just my wife and I think we'd be all over that. But they've really increased their prices though on that Milan route and also their Athens route.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It used to be a real bargain, and now it's a lot of dollars and a lot of points. Those two Emirates flights, remember, I'm traveling with a family of five. That was one of these flights that had like virtually unlimited reward availability. I was clued into it when I had a friend I helped her book her whole family to go to Greece for a wedding. It was a real big Fat Creek wedding. And it was like 14 members of her family. And I think most of them we got into one flight. And even after we booked them on that flight, there was still plenty of business class seats available. And it was like, I've never seen anything like that, where it's just this permanent state of virtually unlimited award availability. There's 100 business class seats on their A380, like the whole upper deck. So maybe it shouldn't be surprising. We all know airlines that have virtually no business class seats available on every flight of the day for a year.
Yeah. What are your favorite airlines if somebody's like, all right, I need to book a specific date or route, and I have a large family, 4, 5, 6, 14 people, which airlines tend to have the availability to support that?
Again, you got to go with those fixed ones like JetBlue and Southwest. So let's say you're booking American Airlines via British Airways. It's going to tell you how many seats are available. And so for some of these relatively short legs, I've seen 9 seats available. In my 9, they could even mean more than that. Because most airlines, when you're looking at fare classes and stuff like that, they only showed up to 9. You could book 9 and you could go back and see there's another 4 available. So I see that there. The Virgin Atlantic Award Tool, are you familiar with that? Virgin has a website and people have discovered if you tinker with the URL, it'll pretty much give you any kind of Virgin or Delta availability. And you could book Delta through Virgin. but it'll show you up to 9 seats available. It'll say like 9 plus seats available. And I see that not often, but I do see it quite regularly. So it all depends on the route. Look, other things I tell people, and I've done award bookings for people, large families, 8 or 9 people. You know, sometimes I ask them if they want to split the team, which means 3 or 4 people on one flight and 3 or 4 people on another. Talk about alone time. Any smaller group is going to travel faster, more efficiently, more comfortably, half as many potty breaks, half as many stubbed toes and headaches and whatever is happening. This is actually an outdoor rule. Any the smaller the group, the faster the speed. So when we came back from South Africa, we actually had 2 of us on Cape Town, Dulles, and 3 of us on Joburg, Newark. And we all had a great time, and we all met up in Denver within an hour or two of each other. And
this only works if you have multiple competent travelers in your group.
Other people I talked to are like, nope, we're taking a family trip. The whole family's going together, period, end of story. And I get it. I get it. Look, when you're in economy class, you're going to find a lot more award availability. This summer, we took a trip we called Grizzrail. We went to Greece and Israel. And at first, they had us Denver, Munich, Corfu, the island of Greece. And it was an economy. I found 5 economy class seats on United. And I was like, well, we'll get there. It'll be okay. We'll live somehow. And then a month or two later, first of all, the Munich Corfu like got dropped. So it didn't even exist anymore. And then one day I read that LA, London was wide open in Polaris Business. The benefit of reading travel blogs all day long every day is you find out these things. So now we have 5 LA, London. And then we for $100 each, we got London Corfu on EasyJet. And so really in the end, it was no big deal. And we got that fun 12-hour Polaris flight. I'm not being sarcastic, but it's a lot more fun to fly 12 hours in Polaris than it is to fly 6 or 7 from New York to London, where you get, you know, by the time you have dinner and between dinner and breakfast, you only have an hour or 2 of sleep. Sometimes it feels like we got a good night's sleep, got to see London, continued on. 5 in business is a real treat for us.
Yeah. If somebody can't be flexible with their dates, just being flexible with maybe changing your plans at the last minute, if worst comes to worst. You take the original flight that you had booked, or maybe something better comes up, but that is another way to approach it. Any other tricks aside from airlines, hotels? Is there anything with car rentals?
If we're talking about groups with car rentals, I'm like a raving super fan of National Car Rental. And it all goes back, I think over 10 years ago, I was on a camping trip. And the guy camping next to us was a traveler, and I'm talking to him, and he says, oh, I hate National. I said, why do you hate National? Because all they ever have is minivans. Like ding, 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 ding. It's true. I mean, we drive a Chrysler Pacifica minivan. We own one. So tomorrow I'm going to Florida with the family. When I go to National, I get to pick any car I want. And you better believe I'm picking the first minivan I see. And those seats 7, which means it seats 5 comfortably. And we also could pick a 3-row SUV. I don't know the tricks to get like the real full-size van that seat 9 or 11 people. I don't know those tricks. But a 7 passenger does really well. And if you don't see it on the lot, if you just talk to the guy there and say, hey, do you got any Pacificas laying around somewhere? We'll call the back, say, yeah, we're washing one right now. I'll have them bring it up in 2 minutes. Had that happen several times. So if you don't see it, ask for it. You could do the standard midsize rate and end up with a minivan pretty easily.
Do you need to have status with National to do this?
You need to be executive status, which is like the bare minimum for the Emerald Isle. And they have a very easy status match to executive elite. So if you have status on any other airline or hotel or rental car, then I think they'll just match up to executive elite. Then you get any car you want, pretty much. If you have like, I think a Visa Infinite, like Sapphire Reserve, you can get basic National status, and then you could do a status match. Like if you have Hertz President's Club or Avis Chairman, or even if you have Hilton Diamond, they'll take non-car rental status. So it's pretty easy to get top tier National if you try. And then you skip the counter, walk straight to your car, walk straight to the lot, pick any car you want. Show them your ID on the way out. It doesn't get any better than that. I've driven around in Mercedes, BMWs, Audis, Mustang convertibles, souped up muscle cars. But of all those, when I'm with the kids, the minivan is our favorite. Ironic. Oh, you have this great sports car. No, thanks. We'll take the minivan. We're talking large groups. I'm a Hyatt Place super fan. Almost every Hyatt Place is going to give you a room with 2 queen beds and a fold-out sofa. And you and I don't want to sleep on the fold-out sofa, but your average 7-year-old can't wait. He thinks it's the coolest thing in the world. Even up to about 10 or 11, they think it's pretty cool. So even families of 4, the kids get 1 bed each and the adults share a bed. But in theory, you could have a family of 6. Not many hotel chains, or no hotel chain that I know of, has the vast majority of their rooms able to accommodate 6 in a standard configuration. So I have family members who have 4 children. They're out there. And they don't get a lot of love from the blogs. Everyone wants to live vicariously through singles and childless couples. But if you're a big family, one or two high place rooms can sleep up to 12. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, especially in the US, I feel like it's a lot easier to pull that off. With Europe, they have those fire codes, which make it a little bit more challenging.
You're absolutely right. I met a family that had, let's say, four or six kids, and they said they got kicked out of their vacation rental because it wasn't approved to sleep that many. This was in Italy. So yeah, you got to be really careful in Europe. But look, in Amsterdam, I stayed in like a, wasn't a hostel, but it was like a family hotel, and they had like two bunk beds plus a regular bed in a room. The Comfort Inn Boulevard in downtown Rome is gorgeous, and they have rooms with four single beds. So if you look, Expedia is a good trick for this. If you look and you specify you actually need four or five or six or whatever, you can come up with stuff. And then after that, oh gosh, in Tel Aviv, we were in a vacation rental. And granted, it was $200 a night. They got like four bedrooms. I mean, it was enormous. It was must have been 2,000 or 3,000 square feet. It was like a whole floor. The elevator opened up to a room. Definitely, I'm a hotel guy. I'm not interested in vacation rentals. But as your room gets bigger, the vacation rental option becomes much more attractive.
So with all of the different tips and tricks that you've learned for people who either have a fixed schedule or need to find a lot of seats on a plane or beds in a hotel room on a specific date for a specific event, what would you say is your number one tip for people listening today?
Leverage your inflexibility, meaning, like I mentioned before, I know when my kids' winter break is next year. I know when their spring break is next year. So knowing we're going to take our spring break, whatever dates in 25, right? I can jump on that exactly 11 months out. I can see if United has a Saver Award to Hawaii. I can grab, maybe even 13 months out, I can grab a suite at the Hyatt Regency in Cancun or wherever. I can do those things that the single and childless couple friends of mine who I'm envious of, I can do those things that they would really do because I know when my kids' breaks are. I know how far out that I can book things. I can grab things maybe they can't.
Great tip. And speaking of great tips, can you give a shout out to somebody else on the internet who you would recommend listeners follow for even more points and miles advice?
Ooh, I got lots of friends who do this. A site I recently found, I don't know who runs it, called Miles Earn and Burn. I just found it like a few weeks ago. Maybe you've been reading it for years. I don't know. And they have a lot of really cool advanced level tricks, let's just call it. Eager to check that out every day and see what cool stuff they've come up with.
I like Miles Earn and Burn. It's another guy in the internet named Matt who is into points. There's 15 gazillion Matts in the world. He is very anonymous. I really enjoy his blog for more advanced level things. Sometimes I do feel like it's like trying to solve a Da Vinci code. And I think it does frustrate a lot of beginners because they're like, what is he even talking about? But if you're more advanced, I think you will enjoy the blog, Miles Earn and Burn. And where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, I'm at jasonsteele.com. There I have my favorite Southwest tricks I posted there. And I do award travel consulting for individuals and more of an author site because, like I said, I mostly write for other people.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jason, so much for coming onto the show today and sharing all of your amazing tips with people, especially everybody who's like, what if I can't just be flexible and jump on wherever the deal is? I think these tips will be so invaluable. So thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you. It's always good to talk to you, Julia.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. If any of the cards mentioned in today's episode piqued your interest, please check out the links in the show notes for more information on any of the cards. Also, if you apply for a card using the links on that page, I may receive a commission too, so please and thank you. P.S. I hear the links work better in Internet Explorer or Safari, and sometimes the credit card applications tend to glitch out in Chrome. Additionally, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And if you would like to make even more travel hacking friends, please sign up for the Patreon to access our monthly masterclass hangouts. We dive deep into a particular points program each month, and you'll get to ask all of your travel hacking questions and enjoy being around other people who enjoy points and miles just as much as you and I do. If you would like an invite to the next one, head over to geobreezetravel.com/hangouts to sign up to be on the invite list. Take care and happy travels!